welcome to the ABCA's podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Brownlee. Our sponsor is Core Energy Belt, the trusted source of professional baseball players in both Japan and the USA. With over 700 professionals, including two former MVPs, relying on these belts, Core Energy has established itself as a leader in performance and durability. I've been wearing their belts for a while now, and the added back support has made a noticeable difference both on and off the field. They offer free shipping and a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. Go to coreenergybelt.com and use code ABCA2025 to save 15% on your first purchase. I'll repeat that. Go to Core Energy Belt and use the code ABCA2025 to save 15% on your first purchase. This episode is sponsored by Netting Pros. Netting professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Netting Professionals specializes in the design, fabrication, and installation of custom netting for backstops, batting cages, dugouts, BP screens, and ball carts. They also design and install digital graphic wall padding, windscreen, turf, turf protectors, dugout benches, dugout cubbies, and more. Netting Professionals is an official partner of the ABCA and continues to provide quality products and services to many high school, college, and professional fields, facilities, and stadiums throughout the country. Netting Professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Contact them today at 844-620-2707 or info@nettingpros.com. Visit them online at www.nettingpros.com or check out Netting Pros on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn for all their latest products and projects. Make sure to let CEO Will Miner know that the ABCA sent you. Now on to the podcast.
Mike Rooney, Kendall Rogers, and Aaron Fitt from D1Baseball.com need no introduction. They're an integral part of the growth of Division I baseball. They've been on the forefront of covering college baseball since the early 2000s. They're a one-stop shop for following Division I baseball. We have a lot to discuss in this episode with the ever-changing landscape. Let's welcome everyone to the podcast.
These three don't need an introduction, and I said it last year. It's like the law offices of Runes, Fitz, and Rogers. I'm still trying to work that out, but I think that works with the law offices of you three. So thank you three for jumping on.
We just got smarter, boys.
I don't think anybody wants me as their lawyer.
Oh, Kendall, I totally want you as my lawyer. I want you as my politician. I want you as my senator.
Kendall can sell anything, including case to the jury. Vote to acquit.
It's a good point. I actually can sell anything.
Yes. Yes, you can.
Like Vinny,
how are you,
Vinny,
RB?
I am phenomenal. I'm looking forward to it. I sent out a Journey clip, a song today at Rob Cooper because I'm feeling the way I feel. Journey.
Nice.
A big fan of that song, but that's kind of how I feel right now because we've got other college levels going and then D1's getting ready to start. So it's my favorite time of the year because you can track everybody now.
No doubt. By the way, man, great job on the ABCA convention.
Yes.
I thought there was a great buzz in D.C. this year for that.
Yeah, and that was one of my questions. I've got so many other meetings, I can't ever get to the D1, and I'm not sure how much got resolved, but what was your guys' take on the meeting Thursday night? I know it got a little kind of dicey, not like the old days, but sounds like it was okay.
You want to go first, Kendall, or you want me to go first?
Yeah, you go for it first.
I thought it was awesome. Like I loved, hey, the way Craig did it, RB, was very courageous. You know, like massive meeting with 300 people and like just kind of like open mic. Like that's like literally throwing yourself to the lions. But I just love the theme of, hey, we like the athletic directors have told us the 34 man roster on December 1st. Like that, if you guys want to talk about that, don't bother. Like, just not interested. So how do we get ahead of that? And, you know, I've long talked about how the unlimited fall rosters make me a little antsy. And I just love the theme of, hey, let's be a pioneer in this whole thing. Let's get ahead of this. Let's take a leadership role in this thing and do the right thing for the student athletes, do the right thing for our sport. So I liked where we landed with 38. There's so many, this stuff's all changing by the day, but I just, I loved I was very proud of the thought of baseball saying to the other sports, like, hey, we want to be a pioneer and get ahead of this. So a lot more to come, but I really appreciated the theme.
I mean, do you feel like this is the first time that baseball gets a major say in what's going on?
I feel like it's the first time we got treated like a major sport in the House settlement. Yeah. Like, that was one of my big takeaways is like, and, you know, let's give credit where credit is due. The SEC considers baseball a major sport, and that league is so powerful in all of college sports right now that by definition, we're a major sport. And yeah. So, you know, again, like that has good and bad to it, but it makes me very proud, quite honestly.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, it's really crazy to think about that probably when we did this podcast 3 or 4 years ago, like the idea of more scholarships and things like that seemed like an absolute pipe dream. Like, mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those things where like, okay, someday we'll get like 4 more. But to say that schools now that you have the ability to give 34 grand, I don't think very many will. So I think a few will. I think a few want to. But the fact that that's even a possibility now is incredible. I commend Craig for, you know, like opening the mic like that, because I cannot tell you how many times, and I always urge coaches, like when you go to the ABCA convention, like get up and talk, because I can't tell you how many years I've gone to that meeting and nobody says a word. And then a week later, you know, somebody's calling me, somebody's calling Craig. Hey, like, what's going on here? Well, like, why didn't you speak up? So I think the fact that coaches are speaking up is a really good thing. You know, just to have some different ideas, land on an actual number, and then press that forward. Because as Ruben's pointed out, I mean, we're in a point of time to where, you know, Craig can only do so much, the coaches can only do so much, and what we think the roster limit might be today might be different tomorrow. So it's just it's a moving target, and it's at least good to get something accomplished there.
I think the hard part for the coaches is they haven't had a whole lot to talk about here in the last 5 years, where in the early 2000s, we had a lot to talk about. So those meetings, so I think they just, I think they got used to just not saying a whole lot. And, yeah. And now you're getting to that point where, okay, you do have a voice in this and you need to stand up. Like, whatever you feel like, whether it's right or wrong, you need to stand up and say something.
Yeah. I still remember, Aaron might have to correct me here. I think it was right after the transfer, like right after the 1 year transfer back in the day was eliminated, like you had to sit out a year, and I think it was Jack Leggett, like Tony Vittorio, got like on the mic, and I mean it was like a heated, I mean it wasn't like mean or anything, it was a professional deal, but like it was like a pretty heated debate on, you know, power conference guy versus like mid major coach, and it was pretty awesome.
And then my dad was kind of stirring the pot on that stuff.
Oh, my brother, of course.
The great Jim Brownlee.
You had the old guard guys that had been at places that didn't have a lot of resources. They were not scared to stand up and say things.
Oh, no doubt. You had the OG up there, Dave Kylitz, up there like, okay, guys.
So great.
I mean, if you guys had a crystal ball, what do you think it's going to look like in 5 years? Does it go 38 to then 34 to start the year, or will it stay at 38? I know everybody has different opinions on that, but if you had a crystal ball, what's it going to look like in a year or 5 years?
Man, I think if I had a crystal ball right now, I would put it in storage, honestly. Like, it just feels, I don't know. What's your take, Fitzy? You're a very wise man. I feel like it all feels so unpredictable.
Yeah. Yeah, I have no idea. I have no idea. Honestly, it's just like, it feels like every time you open your email, there's something new from some new piece of legislative thing coming through the ticker, and it's like, okay, well, I guess we're taking a left turn here now. You know, it's like, I don't know. I mean, Kendall, you have a better feel for this than anybody. What do you think?
Well, as Augie Garrido would say, expect the unexpected. And I think when you look at college baseball issues, I think the one thing that you're not going to see is a stricter thing. Like, I think, whether it's rosters for now, we're going to have a little more strict rules. But I think moving forward with like things like scholarships, I think you're going to see, you know, you're going to be able to max out for the foreseeable future. I think NIL, you know, that's one of the big things right now is, you've got Congress of all people involved in it, wanting to put NCAA in, exempt from antitrust laws and things like that. But you got this third party now, this accounting firm, who's going to quote unquote approve NIL deals starting next summer. And I just think it's one of those situations where I don't think they're going to decline any of them. Because here's the thing, we've gone around and about this whole issue over and over and over. But market value on a player in college baseball or college football or any other sport is what someone's willing to pay you. Like, how, if you're a third party, how can you tell somebody that they're not worth X amount of dollars? The market value is what, you know, the University of Alabama is willing to pay you to play baseball there. So I think that's one thing, you know, the NCAA is saying now, like, oh, in a year, we're going to have really strict rules around NIL. I don't think you're going to see that at all. I think that's going to end up getting challenged in court like everything else.
What's the difference between that and like a professional sports league that has a salary cap, though? Like, I mean,
collective bargaining. Yeah, that's the difference.
Collective bargaining. They're essentially employees of the organization.
Right.
Yeah. So it's so funny. That's like, I think that's the catch 22 for college sports right now is what we really need is collective bargaining, but collective bargaining can only happen between an employer and a union. And we, you know, people like me desperately don't want college baseball players to be employees. And so, you know, if you made me make a prediction, RB, it's that college football players are employees in 5 years and the rest of college athletes are just normal college athletes that have their own classification.
Good luck.
Yeah, right.
With Title IX and things like that.
Yeah.
Because I think the four of us fell and do feel that college baseball is as good as it's ever been. And the World Series, we all felt that last year. And then it's like within 6 months, it's like all heck breaks loose. And so it's like, how can we get it to continue to keep going where it is, because I think college baseball is as good as it's ever been.
No, for sure. I was going to say, it actually kind of just steer the conversation just a hair. Like, I actually feel like college baseball at every level is getting better, is going to get better, because here's the thing. And I get the argument for mid-major coaches and things like that. And I actually think Runes disagrees with me a little bit on this one. But, like, I think that the way that the setup is right now with NIL, transfer portal, et cetera, in the roster limits, I think the number of really talented prep prospects that are not going to be able to go to LSU or Mississippi State or Texas A&M, like, those kids have to go somewhere, right? So where are they going to go? They're going to go to the Sun Belt. They're going to go to Conference USA and things like that. So that league gets more talented. Well, guess what? The mid-level player that's going to a Conference USA school moving forward is going to go to the Big South or the SoCon or the Southland. So what happens? Those leagues get better. Well, what happens to the mid-level player in those conferences? They're going to junior colleges or D2. So what happens? Those levels are getting more talented. So I actually think the trickle-down effect here with all these different rules is really good for every single level of baseball, especially junior college baseball.
And I would add to that, RB, that like, you know, NIL changed football. Like, the SEC had suffocated football, right? And look now. And I would say, like, this is, if you take us to the field this year in 2025, the elephant in the room for me is that the SEC's won 6 of the last 7 national titles. And we've only had one non-SEC team in the finals in the last 4 years.
Crazy.
So, like, that concerns the heck out of me. And, you know, I think the unlimited fall rosters, where then we start cutting kids and then they can't go to the Sun Belt, right? They have to go to all those types of things. And who knows how that shakes out. But here's what's interesting. Fitzy pointed this out. So the SEC, so dominant, all these national titles, 98 players drafted last year. You look at our All-American list, RB, and if you didn't know any better, you would say the ACC is the best conference in the country.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, Kendall and I have talked about this a million times. The Big 12, like, I hate conference realignment, but if I'm a Big 12 baseball fan, man, conference realignment hooked you guys up. Like, the Big 12 is fun. And then the Big 10 is exciting with these West Coast schools. But Fitzy, I'll kick it to you. But, like, that was jarring to see the ACC on the All-American teams.
Yeah, I think it's like 11 first-teamers for the ACC and 3 for the SEC, something like that. Very, very surprising when we did our deliberations, you know, conference blind, and then you look up and tally up. It's like, whoa, hey, I mean, like, there's a lot of talent in the ACC, and there is every year. But this year in particular, I don't know, we've speculated that maybe it's just because the SEC had so many players drafted last year that, you know, they – maybe it's, we're waiting for that next crop to still emerge from the SEC, whereas the ACC, just these things can be cyclical. But the point is, I mean, maybe this is the ACC's year. I mean, right now we only have, we have ACC team at number 2, and then I think North Carolina is number 6. We have Florida State. We have a few in the top 10, but it's still dominated by the SEC at the top. But ultimately, star power does tend to win out in college baseball, you know, at the end of the day, for the most part. We're talking about the College World Series champions. It's teams that have big mega stars, you know, when you've got a a Skeens and a Cruz, or you've got, you know, take your pick of Tennessee's megastars, my God. But I mean, it's, you know, those teams that are really loaded, they stand out and they win when it comes down to it.
And I was going to ask you three that. Are we talking about Tennessee with a three-peat if they didn't have to face Paul Skeens 2 years ago on Friday in Omaha?
So I think the more, like, I'm the low guy on Tennessee right now. Like, we that was a big part of our deliberation, RB, is like those three SEC teams. I mean, A&M number one, that took 3 seconds, right? Virginia number two, honestly, that took 3 seconds. Like, anybody that, like, just look at Virginia's roster. It's bonkers. And they're better on the mound this year. But for me, LSU, Arkansas, and Tennessee is a really fun conversation. I think Fitzy and I are flag planners on Arkansas. But, you know, Kendall makes really good points in favor of LSU and Tennessee. Like, that's a fun trifecta right there.
And you guys have a hard job now because it just seems like everybody's good.
Yep.
Yep, yeah, especially the, you know, like Aaron mentioned, the top of the SEC. I mean, you're just, you know, you're searching for a needle in a haystack, trying to figure out the difference between all these different teams.
Ultimately, I think for me, the separator is everybody hits now. Everybody hits 1,800 home runs a year. That's the world we live in, for better or for worse. the teams that have actual arms, that have power, stuff, and experience, those stand out to me. And so that's kind of what I'm looking for, is because we know you're going to hit. You know, even Arkansas, people question their offense, whatever. They're fine. They're going to hit. Everybody hits. It's just a matter of who's got the arms. Arkansas has real arms. And so for me, that has my attention.
You know, one thing, Brownlee, I was going to go back to is, you know, we're talking about the ACC and the SEC, and, you know, obviously the SEC kind of dominates the top 10, but I think we would all agree that the ACC, especially the last couple of years, like, the you know, there used to be this gap where, like, the middle, the bottom of the SEC was just, honestly, just way better than the ACC. Whereas I kind of feel like the gap there between the middle and bottom of those two leagues has really shrunk. Like, I feel like those teams are very, very comparable, and the ACC in many cases has better teams in those ranges right now.
And yeah. Kendall, and you and Aaron were out quite a bit this fall, correct?
Oh yeah.
Aaron definitely was. I was out a few places.
Who was the best player pitcher you guys saw this fall?
The best team I saw was Virginia. I didn't see the Aggies. And that was a no-brainer, but I mean, best player and pitchers is a good one. I mean, I would say certainly I've actually said this a few times, that the pitcher I saw that stood out the most to me was Chase Meyer at West Virginia. I mean, just the day I saw him was at Wake Forest. It was ridiculous stuff. I mean, it was definitely the best breaking ball I saw all fall. I mean, and that's a guy that if he throws enough strikes, and I'm a believer. Again, planted my flag in this already in our last podcast where we did a lot of flag planting. You know, Runes is still, I think, a little more skeptical than me about the strike throwing piece, but guy's electric. I mean, we're talking like 95, 98 with a ridiculous, you know, double plus breaking ball. So that to me was the nastiest arm I saw all fall. And pitching wise, I mean, you know, Merrick Houston, I think, really, and Justin LeBron, I keep saying those two guys are the two best shortstops in the country, and I kind of go back and forth on which one I like more. At the moment, I'm all in on the Merrick Houston train, you know, Wake Forest shortstop. I just think he's the best defensive shortstop in the country, and I think the bat continues to get better and better. And I don't think people give him the credit he deserves as a hitter, because he, you know, his numbers were so bad as a freshman, but he made a big leap last year. You know, I mean, it's about 1,000 OPS with more walks and strikeouts, and hit some home runs, 8 home runs, and had some doubles. I mean, like, he's become a really good player, and he's taken another leap forward this year. So I think that guy's a complete player and a true superstar.
Runes, West Coast wise, UC Santa Barbara going to be good again? I know it's Bremer, right? I saw him throw against Campbell last year.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, I think that's what's interesting, right? Like, I'm really nervous about parity, and yet UC Santa Barbara's got two first-team All-Americans in the preseason, right? Like, and if the draft was today, Tyler Bremner would be the first college right-hander taken, right? Like, that's a top five profile. And then Cole Triba, they're, you know, he's like a tricky lefty from a sidearm slot, but he touches 95, right? It's like, good luck with that. And so I think the West Coast, what's really intriguing to me, RB, is that Stanford is going to be much must-watch college baseball this year because of, you know, Rentaro and their move to the ACC, and they've got all that pitching back. And then, you know, like, I'm super curious. Like, I think Oregon is the best team in the Big Ten day one. But, like, what does the Big Ten do for UCLA and UCLA, or USC and UCLA? Just like that, is that too much for them, or do they immediately surge because of the change in leg? I think the same thing for the Arizona schools. I think, like Kendall alluded to it with the SEC, it's the same in the Big 12. Like, teams 4 through 10 in the Big 12, these guys know. I tortured them in our group chat. I did the preview RB, but I was basically saying, please rescue me. I cannot separate these seven teams. Somebody do this for me. And of course they did not. But that makes it fun, right?
Does travel come into play though, Runes, for the West Coast schools now that they have to travel a little bit more? I'm just throwing it out there.
So I'm from the Jim Brownlee school, RB, where it's like, you're 20 years old, for God's sakes. Like, travel should not, you know, so I'm being facetious, but I don't think so. I think what's hard for Stanford, if I picked one example, is their four cross-country trips are nasty. Like, they're going to NC State. They're going to Virginia. I'm going to mess it up, but, like, I feel like they're going
to UNC,
weekend. Yeah, and, like, Clemson, too, or Duke. Or so, like, you look at Stanford's schedule, and you're like, they were 22 and 33 last year, and that's their schedule. Like, you know, and those aren't those aren't 15-minute flights. Yeah. So it's I don't know. I'm not focused on the travel. I'm more focused on who they have to play.
But then you factor in the midweek game. And that's why I asked too. It's not just the weekend component of that. It's then going back and having to rally to play a Tuesday or Wednesday midweek game, which is where I think you're going to see it just as much when they've got to come back.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Play somebody, because that's a quick turnaround to try to do that. Those of us that had to do that turnaround, go to the West Coast and come back and play a midweek game in the Midwest, that's a tough.
Yeah. The best test case team this year is going to be Oregon, because I think Oregon for me is like probably leaps and bounds the best team in the Big Ten going into the season. And I mean, they're going to have really, really long trips from Eugene. So I'll be curious to see, like, how is their team playing in late April and early May?
And Oregon busted my bracket. We do an office bracket where you pick your eight teams. And I had UC Santa Barbara going to the World Series after I saw him at Campbell. It's crazy to think that Oregon actually busted.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I've never been. But last year I've never been more impressed in a team that lost a super regional than Oregon last year. The way they handled the heat, the way they threw haymakers at A&M. Boy, I really like those guys offensively this year. Anton Arrows was awesome that weekend. I mean, pitching-wise, I think they have enough there to make a run. Oregon's one of those teams to me. I think they're more of a top seven, top eight team than probably a top 12 team in my eyes.
Should have been harder in the rankings. Pound the table, Kevin.
Yeah, sorry, man. Plant the flag. Plant the flag.
We struggled internally with that, RB. Like, we have Oregon 12th, right? So it's like, we're, you know, come at me, bro, right? It's like, come on, you're 12th. But we did have Oregon State 7th. And I think I'll speak for myself. I felt like Oregon State just had more star power than maybe Oregon. Oregon, their superpower is, you know, Kendall used this analogy, which I love. Like, Oregon's got very much a decade ago Cal State Fullerton feel. They're kind of in your face. There's like this really fun confidence. They're very skilled. Oregon's got eight of their nine starters from the Super Regional back. Grayson Grinzel, he's the only kid in the country that I'm aware of that has started two Super Regional games. He started in each of the last 2 years. And, you know, we know Mark Wasikowski and that staff recruit like crazy. I just think Oregon State's talent level. And, you know, I think I speak for the group. It is so awesome that Oregon State is so crazy relevant, or still crazy relevant in baseball, because – you know, they were left for dead in conference realignment, and then they've been so close to getting back to Omaha, can't punch through the door, and yet they get one of the top transfers in the country in Ava. Iva Arquette, and then Dax Whitney's a 6'5 right-hander from Idaho that throws a billion miles an hour, and he spurns the draft. So good for the Beavs.
Anybody outside the top 25? I know it's really hard to put the preseason 25, but anybody outside that, or maybe even conferences that people aren't talking about as much?
Fitzy, do number 25. I'll round up into 25. I think that's a good one for us.
Wait, so you want me to talk about Team 25 or the teams outside?
The Trojans.
Oh, the Trojans. Yeah, I love the Trojans. I think for me, that's the team in the Sun Belt. I feel like I talk about this team all the time, though. But yeah, I mean, they're just, you know, I think they did a great job in the portal with some of the power arms that they brought in. Plenty of, you know, lots of left-handed hitting in the lineup, but also you know, they got power. I mean, they're experienced. I think they're, it's a rising program that we're buying on. But the team outside the top 25 that I want to talk about, I love UConn. Again, this is a program that just keeps on winning, and you know, they've been to Super Regionals. They have players back with Super Regional experience, and they're just they're old, you know. They have got, again, I like guys, teams that have experience that you can count on the mound, and these guys do, but also in the lineup. That's a team that I really wish we could have gotten into the top 25.
Anybody else for y'all?
You know, a team that didn't make our next 10, but I do like them a lot. They lost some key pieces, but I do like what the foundation they have is Louisiana. Again, kind of like I saw Oregon in the Super last year, you know, Louisiana, you know, just ran into A&M in the championship of the regional, but eliminated Texas. That was a really good team. You know, Jose Torres behind the plate is kind of their heart and soul. He's their leader. I think you look at the front end rotation, I mean, it's as good as any team at that level. I mean, with Chase Morgan, you know, a lefty up to, you know, 96, and then Andrew Herman, you know, I think he's a fifth-year senior or a fifth-year player, also from the left side. You know, Matt Dex has another really good team there. And that league, once again, is really going to be really good. I mean, Caden Bodine at Coastal Carolina, you know, Southern Miss is going to have a really good club once again, and, of course, Troy.
RB, I'm planting a flag on Louisville. That's one of my flag plants. I think they were in our next 10, and I love their freshmen, and I love the vibe of their program right now. Like, there's just kind of like an ornery, we don't like our current status. It's interesting. If you look at Louisville's roster, some veterans left, some veterans stayed. And I think that's can be really healthy. If you have a veteran group that's, you know, maybe not all on the same page, I'm speculating, of course, but I don't know. I just steal Fitzy's phrase, I love the cut of Louisville's jib right now.
And I'm pulling for Louisville because they kind of stayed away from the transfer portal stuff because they've always been built on development. So I'm pulling for Louisville this year to pull one out because they have kind of stuck to their guns on the development piece of that.
They did get the Valley Pitcher of the Year, though. Brennan Cutts.
But I think
if you're
going to
go on the portal,
like,
that'll work.
You have to now. Like, whether you want to
or
not.
You do.
Like, you have
you
to.
You got
to
do it.
You have to. Like, this would have been hard for me to go back and coach in this era. It would have been really hard for me because I would have probably, we'd probably been glorified junior college where I was at, honestly. I would have, that's
you go the old Dabo Swinney approach.
Huh? It's like, okay, come here, play good for 2 years, and we'll get you somewhere else. Which I think schools are willing to do that, I think they can do it that way.
That's why you're podcasting with us right now.
That's right.
Exactly. Coaching intrigue. Obviously, Sloss probably the most intriguing.
Yeah.
And see how that plays out. Any other ones out there besides Sloss?
I'll tell you what.
I got one.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Mitch Hanis.
Yeah, yes. That's the one I was going to say. It's, you know, that is the
nobody
one.
Nobody talks about Mitch. And shout out to Mitch because he knows I have
a man crush on Mitch.
I love him. But
we talk about Mitch.
Outside of Sloss, that's my most intriguing coach.
Well, I'll say this. What's really interesting, what's really interesting is I'll give their athletic department credit because when the AD called me, I told him, I said, man, you had me stumped on this one. You know, whenever they hired Mitch Hanis there, I had pretty much not heard his name at all. And so whenever they called and were like, hey, like, this is the guy we're hiring, I was like, wait, what? Like, wait, Mitch Hanis is South Florida? Like, what's going on here? But, you know, you look at the way he recruited Puerto Rico and he recruited Latin players at Indiana State. I mean, if you can – and again, I'm not bagging on, like, Terre Haute, but, like, if you can get – the Latin player to go to Terre Haute, you know, I'm guessing they're thinking, hey, what can he do with a kid in Tampa? So I think it's a really neat hire. I think he did a phenomenal job. I think we'll look back at what they did at Indiana State over the last 3 years is one of the best coaching jobs in the history of our sport. I put it like, obviously Wayne Graham and guys like that did it for decades. But what I'm saying is just for a 2 or 3 year sample size, that's up there with one of the best coaching jobs in modern era college baseball. what they were able to accomplish there, hosting a regional, going to a super regional in Fort Worth a couple of years ago. So, I would not bet against Mitch. I know it's kind of an odd fit. People are going to look at me like how is this guy going to win in Florida? But he's a really good coach, as you said, and nothing would surprise me there.
And if they didn't have to host the Special Olympics in Terre Haute, they host that super and they go to the World Series.
Potentially, yeah. The other intriguing hire. I mean, it's very low hanging fruit. Is none other than Mike Early at A&M. I was trying to think of a situation. I mean, the only thing I can think of in college sports that's similar to this is when Larry Coker at Miami and took over for Butch Davis and then won the national championship. But you know, Larry was an old school, long time coach. So it wasn't some guy that was just thrown into a head coaching job like Mike Early. So to me, just how he handles that team, and it seems like so far he's handled them really well in preseason, which is some of the things I've seen he said. But, you know, how does he handle that team when they're going through the rigors of the SEC and he's having to make, you know, a bullpen decision after bullpen decision in a 7-7 game against LSU on a Sunday in a rubber match? That'll be fascinating. I'm not even insinuating that he can't do that. I'm just saying it'll be interesting to see his philosophy on those things because we do not know it yet. Be like throwing somebody in as the ABCA director, and we have no idea what they even believe.
He's been around some really good head coaches, though, too.
No question.
Yeah, 100%.
Some of the best we've had.
Hey, RB, so here's some of the ones that I thought were just like, to Kendall's point, like where the administration makes a hire and you're like, okay, they're paying attention. Like, that's awesome. Like Arkansas State hiring Mike Silva, I thought that was a huge get. Washington getting Eddie Smith, amazing. You know, Winthrop getting Mike McGuire, like he was there in the heyday, the Kevin Slowey days, Fitzy, if you will.
Oh, good point.
But I think two impactful ones that could change, you know, this is dramatic, but change the sport, put that in air quotes. Justin Hare going to Ohio State, that could upset the apple cart in that league in a really positive way. Like, Justin Hare is no joke. That's big energy, and he's an Ohio guy. And then Logan Stout at Arkansas Pine Bluff is one of just my favorites. This is a self-made millionaire who just loves the sport, and I'm captivated by him at Arkansas Pine Bluff. I think it's going to be really fun to watch.
I think he's a self-made billionaire. I mean, it's a whole different level of success that this guy has achieved.
Yes.
He spoke on our youth stage two years ago, by the way, in Dallas. He was on our youth stage. Did great.
Him and Fit have a lot of similarities. I'm not surprised. You know, self-made billionaires.
A lot, yeah, for sure.
All right. Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with everything that my esteemed colleagues are saying. I do think there's also a couple of just kind of air apparent guys taking over that were like Steve Sabins at West Virginia. We all know this guy's an absolute stud. He's been the handpicked choice for a while. He's going to do a great job. And Kevin Schnall at Coastal, I mean, he and Gary Gilmore were doing their thing together for a long time. I mean, it couldn't be a more natural transition there. So a couple of these are just kind of no-brainers that I still think are worth mentioning.
And great
guys. Did you
say
Paul Maneri?
It's guys that guys that you pull for, too, because you know how hard they've worked their entire careers, and it's guys that you pull for because they are great. They're great people too.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you have to play your flag on who's playing for the national championship.
I've got Arkansas, and you want me to pick who they're going to beat, huh? I'll take Arkansas over Virginia. How about that?
I'm going to go. Virginia is going to win it all. And they're going to beat the Georgia Bulldogs.
Oh, great poll right there. Kendall, if you say A&M Tennessee, you need to start walking around your house.
I mean,
I'm going to say A&M over North Carolina. I really like North Carolina. I actually might like them almost as much as Virginia, but I'll go with A&M. So here's the thing I go back to on A&M is, like, you know, I was watching an interview that their local media did with Hayden Schott. The thing that's really interesting about their team is they're really loaded. They know they're really loaded, and like they don't feel like they have any pressure. But they're kind of like, we know, like, we're really good. Like, we don't really care. Like, people think we're going to win the national championship. Okay, that's cool. You know, it's just there doesn't seem to be a high pressure level with that team. We'll see if that continues, but they certainly seem to have the right mindset.
Does LSU
Aiden Schott is a national treasure, by the way. Just an amazing. I wish he could stay in college baseball.
I think LSU will be in Omaha. I think they have a lot of balance. I mean, there may not be. I mean, I'm just looking at all these different teams, but there may not be a team with a more like high upside rotation as LSU. When you look at Cade Anderson, Chase Shores, Anthony Ionson, all those guys are first round talents. The question is, you know, can Shores stay healthy? Will Shores' breaking ball take the next step? You know, Ionson, you know, obviously did a really, you know, good job out at UCSD, but playing UCSD is not the same as being in the SEC. So, like, if all those guys pan out and Ionson is your Sunday guy, like, LSU could be really good.
And what if you draw, like, this is where the ACC is fascinating, RB, to me. Yeah. Like, what if you're LSU and you draw Florida State in your super regional? Because, you know, like, it is a lot of new pieces there, and they did lose two first-round picks in their lineup. And, you know, Florida State's a host, not a top eight. And then they roll into your super regional, and you're LSU, and Jamie Arnold, I mean, I think he's winning game one, right? And then it's like, okay, like, this is – and Link Jarrett is – you know, is like Rain Man for college baseball. The dude's an absolute savant. I that's where the depth of the sport gets really fun.
And for you guys too, I mean, I think about how you guys started this whole thing, and now I look on your page and there's 8 million people writing for you now. How big is the staff at D1 baseball now?
I think it's 8 million and two officially, actually. Pretty big staff.
I'm proud for you guys. Like that's gratifying. Like to see what you guys have done to build this thing and where it is now. And I've said every year, you guys are a huge reason why the sport is in the place it's in right now with the work that you guys do. Cause you guys put in tireless hours.
Well, thank you, RB. It's been a lot of fun building this thing for sure. We love the team we put together. We continue to grow. I'm very excited about the addition of Bradley Smart this year, formerly of Friday Starters, who's taking point and just hit the ground running with our new ACC Extra product, which, my gosh, the amount of content you could find out there right now, it's staggering what he's putting out there by himself. So, you know, we just, you know, trying to get better every day, coach, one day at a time, you know, the fundamentals, the whole nine yards.
Where are you guys at early? Where are you at early?
Globe Live for me opening weekend.
Where are you going, Fitzy?
I'm going to Puerto Rico first.
Nice.
Weekend. Yeah. First year of the tournament down there. Actually a sneaky, interesting field too. I mean, obviously UVA, kind of the headliner. Michigan, though, is, I think, a projected regional team. And Michigan and Penn State, both borderline projected regional teams. Stetson is the team to beat in the ASUN. So I think there's like five or six teams in that field that are, I think, postseason caliber. Although obviously UVA is the big headliner. So yeah, I think that's gonna be a fun tournament down there. Then I've got a couple weeks in Texas, Globe Life and the Frisco Classic.
And Rune's your surprise.
Yeah, well, just all over Phoenix. Hey, RB, I wanna brag on these guys for a second. It is amazing, like when you think about KP and these two teaming up 10 years ago. It's 10 years now. We did. Yeah, and it was like the NBA creating a super team. And then I'm getting to speak at the Lafayette First Pitch Banquet coming up. And, you know, their coach, A.J. Miller, made a really good point about what Kendall and Aaron have done with D1 baseball. He said, hey, our catcher, Ethan Swidler, is on the top 50 catchers ranking list. And you have no idea what a big deal that is for our program, for this kid, for his family. And he's like, there was no top 50 catchers list 10 years ago, right? Like that just wasn't the coverage of the sport that D1 baseball has provided, and how it amplifies the sport. We've always had a great product. We've just had a tough time amplifying it. And so I couldn't be more proud of what these guys have done and to be part of it. And so that's a long way of saying I'll be in Phoenix opening weekend.
Any other shout outs before I let you guys go? I know you guys are busy, but any other shout outs?
Shout out to you for having us on your program, my friend.
Yes.
What a pleasure.
Rune said, I look forward to this every year to be able to hang out with you guys. We always are in passing when I see you guys, but it's fun for me to be able to spend some actual time with you guys.
Absolutely. You know, and I would add this too, like, you know, what we built is pretty awesome, but it's also helped to have people in the sport who kind of reciprocate. And, you know, you guys at the ABCA have been awesome at doing that. Like, you know, throughout the years, I'm sure Craig's probably heard from me way too much at times. But like, you know, when legislative things are going on, like he's easily reachable, calls me back immediately. We talk about it and things like that. So we appreciate you guys as well. Just the staying on the ball and all these things. So much, very much a moving target, and nobody really knows what to expect, but Craig does his best.
Runes, final shout outs for you.
Yeah, I think there's so much stuff going on off the field right now that it can be a little disconcerting, but I know I speak for the group on Valentine's Day when we, you know, like I've already got my spreadsheet for opening weekend, right? Like I'm going to see 7 games in 4 days and I'm going to see Mike Farron and Jordan Schusterman and all of our friends in college baseball. And, you know, like the house settlement, there's just a lot going on. It feels so daunting. But once we get once the first pitch is thrown on the 14th of February, it's all good, right? Like it's just like the players are so good, the coaches are so good, the drama they give us is so amazing. You know, like SEMO being a regional finalist and LIU almost taking down North Carolina in a regional and Western Michigan taking Kentucky to a final pitch, and you know all these things that we see. We mentioned Evansville. That
High Point won their first regional game ever last.
Yes, year. Right. So here comes the fun stuff, you're right? Like if you feel worn out by the house settlement and all that stuff, you're good. We're 2 weeks away from the fun stuff.
All right. Thank you, guys. Appreciate you, as always.
Appreciate you, RB.
Thanks, Coach.
See you, RB. Thank you.
Grateful for my relationship with Mike Kendall and Aaron. I always look forward to sitting down with them every year. They mean so much to the sport. Can't thank them enough for sitting down with me again. Thanks again to John Litchfield, Zach Hale, and Matt West in the ABC office for all the help on the podcast. Feel free to reach out to me via email at rbrownlee@abca.org, Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok at @CoachB_ABCA, or direct message me via the MyABCA app. This is Ryan Brownlee signing off for the American Baseball Coaches Association. Thanks, and leave it better for those behind you.
Wait for another day, and the world will always be turning, and your life was never for yearning, and you know that wait. Wait.